streets don't love you back. Stay tuned every Wednesday at 11:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 8:30 Pacific, with your hosts, Boyd and Lucinda, for the hottest talk show in existence. The streets don't love you back. I gotta do right before they call me
home. Good evening and welcome to the Streets Don't Love You Back show. I'm your host, Lucinda, with my co-host, Boyd. And our topic is, as always, the streets don't love you back. Join us every Wednesday night with real people, real stories, and real changes as we hear the truth about gangs, drugs, violence, abuse, and other life issues. We have an awesome show for you tonight. Our guest is author Gregory Marshall, and he has a powerful story and message to share with you tonight. So stay tuned and have all your friends call in and give a shout out. Before we bring him on, let me welcome Boyd to the show.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and once again, we thank everybody for tuning in around the world every Wednesday night. And like the wife said, we got a great show with my man G-Man, and he about to bring it to you with a very educational story to educate our youth against the gangs, drugs, and violence. And without further ado, we're going to pass the mic to G-Man, and he's going to formally introduce himself, and we're going to get it started. G, it's on you.
All right, good evening, everybody. My name is Gregory Marshall, also known as G-Man. We'll get into that later on, how I got the nickname. I think it's going to be important. And I'm just honored to be on the show and to share this powerful, living testimony with you guys.
My man. And, G, we're going to go ahead and get right into this, man. I would like for you to explain to the viewers, how did you get involved with the street life, period?
Okay. I grew up as a nerd, actually. My life started off as pretty innocent. I came from Natchez, Mississippi, and where my family roots are at, moved to L.A., and eventually moved to Inglewood, California. I was a Boy Scout. I was in the choir, had a paper route. I was doing good in school, doing all the right things. Eventually, I became a product of my own environment, which is the streets. And from that point on, my life, all my mentors became all the wrong mentors. Not having a father in my life was the turning point, I think, in my life. I know for a fact. My father stayed about 5 minutes from me basically all my life in Inglewood. So I had to pass his house on my paper route to help my mother pay bills. So I was seeing my father every day with his family, with his other family over there. And I think that was the turning point in my life of seeing that. It was devastating for me. So, and at 17, I ended up catching my first case, which is an armed robbery and hijacking, and tried as an adult. And from there, everything went downhill. Once I got the felony, there was nothing left for me. There was no hope for me. So I'm in jail now. So The Education of a Criminal is a subtitle of my book, and that's exactly what it's about: The Education of a Criminal. So that's the beginning of this crazy journey that I traveled up to now.
Man, so G, when you went out here, you know, you was truly just like most inner city kids that go through the father not home syndrome, or he there for a little bit, and then he skirt away and, you know, seen for a minute. You know, it's like we all get that anger and that bitterness in us, and we take it to a whole nother level, to the street world. So let the viewers know how the bitterness, the anger, and all that played a major part in your illegal activity starting out as a youngster.
Yeah, if I hadn't known where he was at or hadn't even seen him, it would be a little different. But me seeing him or just being able to drive past his house and while we're struggling over here, had a huge impact on my life. And so I had this mentality of, I'm going to show him. I'm going to be a better man than he was to me and, you know, to my child, if I have any, you know. So that was a critical point in my life, because I feel like had he been there, maybe things wouldn't have went the way it did. Maybe they still would have. I don't know, you know, but that's water in the bridge. But it happened, and so I became a ruthless criminal. I wasn't your typical criminal. I wanted to be a leader. You know, I didn't want to be a follower. So I saw Tookie Williams one day out in front of my – he's the leader of the Crips in L.A. here. I saw him out in front of my high school one day, and I wanted to – I saw him, and he had baby oil on his body, and he had his low rider out there, his big perfect afro, and I said, I want to be like him physically, and I wanted to have the power that he had in the streets, and so that's what I strive to be, more like him. He was the wrong role model, though, but he was one of the only options that I had, only choices I had. So I utilized that once I went to youth authority at 17, tried as an adult. That's just what I did. Let me tell you a little bit. I was kicking in doors and doing home invasions way back before, you know, when they was doing a long time ago. I've been doing this. I'm kind of a dude that would follow you home in your expensive car in Beverly Hills, tie you up with a telephone cord, pistol whip you, take everything you got. So I had no fear of nothing. I had nothing to lose. So that was the kind of dude that I turned into. I really was a menace to society. I was a monster. And I, you know, I didn't care about being stopped, even though it could have ended up being my death, you know. So that was where I started at.
My man, and I want to, you know, I read your book, G, you know, and I just wanted to let the viewers know online, when I read G's book, you know, we came to find out that we had been in contact with the same cats that G had grew up with, you know.
Yeah.
So I called G and I say, man, I used to write your man in Pelican Bay, you know? Yeah. And his little brother was on our radio show 3 years ago. So I would like for you to tell the people who that is, G, and how did you meet the person you're finna talk about?
Okay. The person he's talking about is Monster Cody, also known as Sanyika Shakur. He wrote a book called Monster. I met him when I was a juvenile, when I went to a youth authority in 1982, I met him, and we were both young, you know. But this dude, we ended up going separate ways, but for the moment, we were comrades, you know, from way back. And then we hooked up again while I was in prison, and so I was in the hole with him in 1989. And I saw this dude had written a book before it had even came out, called Monster. I was in a hole. I read, he had 8 chapters of his book written. So he showed it to me. He shared it with me. And so once we bumped heads again, he was my comrade, because I wasn't a Crip or a Blood, but I was a gangster. But he was a Crip. And so that's how I got the idea to even write a book, because I saw what he could do. I saw a photocopy of a check that he showed me for $150,000. Later on down the line, I remember seeing that. And I said, wow, you know, if he can do it, I can do it. And so that's how I ended up, I got the idea to write my story. And let me just be clear, I had no formal education. I got a GED while I was in youth authority. So I had no skills. I had never used a computer in my life. And so when I made the decision to write this book, I had to learn, you know, I'm self-educated. So I wasn't intimidated by anybody or any situation. I just feel like I could do it. And so my thing is to make sure that I during this interview, I want to make sure I instill that whole concept that you can do whatever you want to do in this life if you choose to, you know. So this is all a part of the education of a criminal as I grew up and what I endured. And that was early on in the game. And so I bumped heads with him again later on in the book, and I guess we'll get to that, Rob, during the interview.
Exactly, you know. And I also want to speak on let the viewers know, how did you start getting involved with the drug trade, you know? Because when I read that in the book, that's what led me up to a lot of other things that I'm going to ask you as well. So how did you get into that drug trade? Because you never wanted your mom to know that you were selling drugs. So let the viewers know that one.
Yeah, well, you know, protecting my mother's feelings was top priority. So I was Well, the thing was, I had to, it was five of us. My mother was raising five kids on her own. And so it was her and I to help, you know, raising my brothers and sisters. And so money got, you know, money got tight. But I didn't want my brothers and sisters to do what I was doing because I was already a black sheep, you know, and just doing little things, little petty things, little burglaries and, you know, whatever. And so I ended up, you know, started selling drugs, PCP. I ended up, you know, I was selling, I started selling drugs early. I think I was maybe 15 when I was selling PCP, 16. I was selling weed, PCP, and I'm trying to think with a couple other things, some cocaine powder way back. But drugs was a way out for really for almost, you know, for a lot of my homeboys in the hood. Because, like I said, once you get that felony, there is no opportunity for employment. Because, you know, I'm figuring out who's going to hire me. So once you, I mean, it's a source of income. And so that's what attracted me, you know, to get the help. And then it blossomed and it snowballed into a nightmare. So, you know, I sold drugs at a real early age, but I just didn't have no fear of nothing, and that's what I did, you know, helping my mother out.
And when you, I read in the book, G, when you started really making things happen from California to down in Mississippi, you know, explain to the viewers how things happened with that and then how things went totally bad for you.
Okay. Well, I did several stints in prison. What happened is I ended up facing the death penalty at one point in my life, and for a murder for hire case that I was involved with. And so after I did 7 years flat on that, and I got out. But previously, before that, I was going out of town. You know, my forte was getting a crew together in my neighborhood and going out of town. I've hustled in four different states. And so, because I was always ahead of the game out of town. So that was my game. My game plan was always an out-of-town game. And so I always took my homeboys, you know, from Imperial Village Crips. And so I had to, I had the security that I needed to make it all happen. So I'm more of a delegator, and so that's what I did. But I made sure that we all made some money, always made sure they made enough money to not get envy enough to try to, you know, do me, because, you know, money is the root of all evil. So I know I had to do a certain way. But eventually, after I went to jail, the last time I went to prison, after I did 7 years straight, I came home, and I got another crew together. It didn't take me no time to put a crew together, because everybody knew I got money, you know. So my homeboy had named me G-Man from when I was in Youth Authority. So that's how, because my name was Greg. So I had a reputation with me, and I had the physical strength, the mental capacity, and the intelligence to make it happen. So I was feared, you know, and I didn't rule by fear, but it was a factor that helped me be successful at being a drug dealer. Well, the last time I hooked up my crew and went out of town, it was in 1994. I went to Natchez, Mississippi, which is really my hometown. I went there to hustle, and it was a huge mistake. I didn't know, you know, everything would turn out like it did, but me and my partner, I took him from Inglewood, and we went down and we set up shop, but we were selling marijuana at the time. We were selling large amounts of marijuana. So we had got to a point where we were getting 60 pounds. Well, I was making $12,500 every 2 weeks profit. And as soon as we got to that point, it was where tragedy hit. So a dude that used to work for me set me up, and I got caught up in a drug deal gone bad. And me and my partner, we went to this spot where we rendezvoused to meet him at. A rule of thumb was never to do business after 12 o'clock midnight, but this one particular night we did. And I had a gut, my gut instinct told me don't do it, but I knew the dude. Anyway, the guy shot me five times. You know, he shot me twice in the head at point blank range, twice in the head, three times in the shoulder. And they shot my partner once in the forehead and killed him on the spot. So I sat in this car in this parking lot where it's pitch black. There's nobody else around, and I'm listening to my heartbeat, and I'm just, you know, that's all I can hear. It was so loud, and I'm like, I'm waiting for it to stop, because I know I'm about to die. I felt my partner's spirit move past me. And all at that moment, all I could think about was, you know, my mother. I'm like, man, I'm about to break her heart with this because I'm about to die. And I'm just wondering, where am I going to go? And my partner's sitting there with his forehead missing. And I'm in the car, and I'm isolated. I'm watching all this take place. And it's like, it was a moment. Where they say your life flashes before your eyes, you know, and it happened. So a sheriff stumbled upon the scene of the crime, not even a full minute after the shooting. And that's how, that didn't save my life. But I was paralyzed. My whole right side was paralyzed. I couldn't even move. I'm sitting in the car. I'm dying. And so the sheriff, the stumbling across me, is what saved my life. And then that began a whole other part of my journey is after that, you know.
Now, when that happened, G, like, you know, I read in the book, you had to go through a lot of therapy and different things like that, you know. So after that happened, what was the main factor of the change that came over you after this certain near-death experience?
Okay, you know, after the shooting, I still hustled with one arm. I was still hustling, you know. I didn't even, because what else can I do? I had none. I got medical bills and insurance. I got medication I need to buy. So, I mean, I got miles to feed. You know, I got my son and my wife, and you know, I'm trying to figure out how I'm gonna even survive out here. So, I was out here with one arm. So I had to learn how to use my left hand to do everything my right hand once did. I was right-handed. So I was driving a stick shift, my little Toyota pickup. I was driving that for a while with one arm, you know. And so I had to learn. It was a tough journey. So eventually, little by little, I got a little use in my right arm, and I had the faith. But I was still hustling. I was still selling cocaine. I was still doing whatever, setting up licks. I was doing hijackings, you know. I was just doing whatever I could still. It was a turning point. The turning point in that part of my life was the kidnapping of my baby brother, another drug deal gone bad that was totally not my fault in this one. And it happened. So that was the last straw, because they were coming to my house, you know, and I, it's like my family's involved now. So the kidnapping of my baby brother was the turning point. I'm like, I got to turn this around. I got to. So that's what I did. That was the last straw. So at that point, I became a handyman. And you know, it was rough for me. I just started all over. My son was watching everything I was doing. He knew I was selling dope. But I knew it was only a matter of time before he emulated me and what I was doing. So I had to assume responsibility as a man. You know, I had to assume responsibility for his welfare. I couldn't let him grow up doing what I did. But he's watching me. So I, you know, one day I told him, you know, one day, 30 days, son, I'm going to throw my pager out the window. We're riding on the freeway on a 101, on the 110. And 30 days later, we were riding. I gave him my pager. And he looked at me like, "What, Daddy?" And I'm like, "Man, throw it out the window." So I threw the pager out, you know, he threw the pager out the window. And from that point on, I started doing handyman jobs and odds and ends and, you know, all kind of little different things. And it wasn't until I ran back into Monster Cody later on, but right before the shooting, I ran to Monster Cody. So I came home, and after I rehabilitated from the shooting being paralyzed, he was in the county jail and asked me to do a thing on American Gangster that he was doing a show on BET. So I did that as his comrade, not as a Crip. But I had already started writing my book at that point. That was the beginning of me making this journey of writing. And so I had to learn. I had never used a computer in my life. I had no formal education. And so I just said, I can do it. And so I started tapping with one finger. My friend helped me get a computer. And then my journey started. I knew that I could do it. I just believed that I could. And I didn't stop until I got to the last page. So that's how I ended up with this book. And I'm currently writing my second book right now. City Within a City.
My man. And I want to just go back a little taste, G. After your brother had got kidnapped, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Your whole mind went to a whole nother level. you know?
Right.
G-Man almost came totally back out, you know?
yeah, right.
But explain to the people how God put his arms around that situation. Explain to the viewers.
Okay. Yeah, well, they had kidnapped him, and they were coming to my house, but they didn't know where I stayed at. They didn't know where I stayed because, you know, you just don't hustle. You know, you have to separate the two when you're hustling. And so I had this .357 Magnum revolver that I had, and I was like, I'm going to kill this dude because, you know, he's kidnapped my little brother. And so I was out in front of the house waiting on him. But I had to start thinking. I had a short span of time to think about how I was going to do this because I'm going to shoot him with my left hand now. I still my right arm is still not fully functioning, and so I'm wondering, am I gonna kill him? Am I gonna kill my own brother? Am I gonna have a murder case? Am I gonna miss him? And would he come back? Now they gonna know where I stay at. So I had to make a decision at that moment, right then and there. Do I get out of the game, or do I go in it all the way? And because we hold court in the streets and we deal with things differently, you know. So we set our own rules. This dude had violated the major rule, was involved with my baby brother, and had nothing to do with the deal. So I wanted to kill him. And it was, you know, it was the moment in my life I said, I'm going to kill a man for the first time in my life. And that was the moment I knew I was going to kill a man because I feel like he earned it. And so I was ready to serve him. And at the very last moment, they got within two blocks of my house, I had to make a decision. I looked at my wife and I just told her, okay, I can't do it. You know, so that's when I stepped out of the game, and she called 911. And once you do that, I'm out of the game. You know, and I knew that was God was really talking to me. You know, that was the message. That was the message that I had been waiting on, trying to get my attention. I wasn't going to take no more chances. That was it. I knew I had to get out of the game then, because it's going. You know, I'm either going to die, because my family's going to be involved now. So that was it. I made my mind from that day on. That would change my life around. And that's exactly what I did. And I stayed true to what I said I was going to do.
My man, you know. And what advice, G-Man, will you give these young youths out here, man, that's trying to live that same lifestyle we once lived, you know? What would you tell these youngsters now?
Well, you know what? When I saw the title of you guys' organization, The Streets Don't Love You Back, it got my attention. Because it's self-explanatory, and I want to just elaborate on that because the streets don't love you back. This is the thing. When you're out there hustling, you don't think about all the consequences and everything that's going to happen. But as a youngster, as myself my thing is I'm going to speak from experience because I did it. I actually did it. I ain't talking about what I seen, what I heard. I'm talking about what I live. The streets ain't no joke. And once they get you, you know, you're gonna end up being a statistic in prison and forgotten because the phone calls gonna stop. All the collect calls you're making, everything to the house, depending on the amount of time you get, determines how long you're gonna be able to call home. You know, and so people are gonna get tired of the collect calls. The homeboys, they're gonna be there. There ain't gonna be nobody there but you. I was fortunate because I had people that looked out for me when I was in the pen. But had I got life like I was facing. I know for a fact that I would just be somewhere locked away, you know, and forgotten about, and, you know, that would be it. So the streets, man, the streets are so devastating. And, you know, at the rate we're going, the black man's on the verge of extinction at the rate that we're going right now. You know, you look at everybody knows somebody that's locked up. Everybody got somebody that they know that's locked up and ain't never going to come home. You could be one of them. And you somebody out here, you go to jail, that's it. That life is over for you. So my advice, man, is, once you get a felony, like you say, it's hard to get a job. But there are certain jobs that you can get, like truck driving, welding, or air conditioning, refrigeration. There are certain things that you can do that can make, you know, enough money to survive out here and live good and be a productive citizen in this, you know, in this environment. But the choice is going to be yours. My advice is to get out while you can. You know, because I got the scars, you know. Every time I look in the mirror, I see the scar on my cheek where the dude shot me in my mouth. I look behind my ear, and I see this dude shot me behind my ear at point-blank range. And I look at my arm, my right hand is still partially paralyzed. And that's my reminder every day of what I don't ever want to go through again in my life. And so my thing was to share my story with you, because I had money before, so it's not about the money. What I'm doing is not, every time I speak somewhere, I'm a motivational speaker also, but every time I've ever spoken, I haven't charged nothing because I was giving back, because I started my writing career back in Natchez, Mississippi. I went back there to make a difference, to finish my book up. And so I spoke down there, and I worked for food. It was nothing for me because I was so humbled. I was humbled, and I was honored to be able to share my story because I am so passionate about my people. So that was my determining factor, was to make a difference. When I started writing that book, I knew that I was going to make a difference because I knew somebody was going to understand and relate to what I went through, and that's important. And so I ain't no preacher. I'm coming at you. I ain't no ex, you know, I'm not no, you know, no slick talking, you know. I'm just a regular dude, man, like y'all. That's my message. I'm just a regular dude that I've been through it myself. And I'm humble. And the thing about it, I'm not ashamed to talk about what I went through or how I felt and what I did. I'm not ashamed of nothing I've done to get to this point. You know, even though I wouldn't want to do it over again, I'm honored to be able to sit here and share this story with you in hopes that I can make a difference in just one life. If I got one person listening to me right now and I force them to at least think about what I'm saying, then I'm doing my job.
And that's real, you know. So, G, I want you to let the viewers know where they can go purchase this book at and give them your website and everything like that.
Okay. What I did was I self-published my book. When it first came out, I self-published the book. And then in the last 3 months, I got picked up by a major publisher, which is Brown Girl Publishing. Victoria Christopher Murray and Rashonda Tate Bisley are my publishers, and they're with Simon & Schuster. They're authors themselves of Simon & Schuster. They started their own publishing company. They read 2 chapters of my book and picked me up. So right now, the book, G-Man, The Education of a Criminal, is in the transition of being, they changed the title to Growing Up Gangster because they're putting the book in Walmart and in different places. And so I'm following the advice of my publishers. So right now, you go to my website, you can see all my activity, you can see all the, you can see everything, you can see the ordering information and everything, the republication date at gman-book.com. And so everything is available right there that you're going to ever want to be able to see and need from me in future projects and everything. It's right there on my website.
That sounds like a winner right there, G. Now, is there anything else, G, that you would like to let the people know? We know how busy you is, you know, so we want to give you the opportunity to let the people know anything else you need the viewers to know.
Okay, this is the most important part of the whole interview is this. You got to keep God first. In every book I've ever autographed, from the first book I've ever signed, I put one thing that for sure I'm going to put in there. Is you keep God first and the rest will follow. If I ever autograph a book for you, I'm going to say that because that's important. That's what you need to understand. None of this is possible without God. And this is going to, I want to be clear on this. Some of you guys are raised in the church. You raised the right way. Your mother, you know, your father, your grandmother, you know, somebody was enforcing church. And some of you are ex-church members and just them fell off, you know. But I'm going to just tell you, things didn't start happening for me. It took me 30 years to get back into church. 30 years, once I got back into church, that's when things started changing my life. And so that's when, you know, that's when the blessings start to pour down, rain on me. And so that's the most important thing. You know, you get in a church. It doesn't even matter what the denomination is. It doesn't matter the Baptist or whatever. It doesn't matter. It doesn't even matter. Just get in church and at least, you know, get the word from a spiritual advisor or something. But that's going to be your main asset and your key to survival and making it out of this.
My man, you know. And any last shout-outs you would like to give anybody, G?
Oh, man, you know what? I just want to make sure I thank my mother. That's the most important thing in my life has been my mother, man. She's been very supportive of me. I praise her in the book, and I give a big, huge accolades go out to her, because without her, you know, your mother always gonna be there, whether your father be there or not, whatever. Your mother is always gonna be there for you, man. So if you have a mother, you gotta make sure you respect her. And you know, my mother is just, she's an awesome lady, and I'm honored to have the opportunity to write in a book, and write a memoir that I can include my mother and make history, and include her in my history. So that's my main thing. I want to just make sure, you know, make sure that my mother knows that I love and I appreciate her and my son, and you know, for not following my footsteps. You know, I have one son, and I want to thank him for being in my life and for not following my footsteps and never going to prison and graduating from, you know, and going to, you know, to college, you know. So a big shout out to my son and my mother, Greg Jr. and my mother, Julia.
Hey, that sounds like a winner, man. I'm going to pass the mic over to my wife, and she's going to ask you a few questions, G. And
okay.
I truly appreciate this interview, and, you know, we'll be seeing you next week in California when
Absolutely.
We get there.
Absolutely. I can't wait,
my
man.
My man. Here go to Mrs.
Right. Okay.
Hi there.
Hey, Miss Boy.
Powerful story. Powerful story you have. Thank God that
you're
here to tell it. I wanted to go
ma'am.
Back a little bit to your childhood. You talk about your dad and walking past his house every day. Were you not able to approach him and stop at his house and visit with him? How was that relationship?
Yeah, you know, we I had two other brothers that he fathered, you know. And we would, once in a while we would be able to go there, but we never felt comfortable because of his new wife. You know, we never felt really comfortable going away at all. So we were really reluctant to do that. But it was an eerie feeling when the three of us would be in the car. You know, my mother had to take us on Sunday to throw our papers, because the Sunday papers was bigger. So we had to get in the station wagon and had the tailgate down, and we, you know, deliver them. But when I remember one specific time when we passed by my father's house, I remember looking at my brothers because we slowed down a little bit. And I remember my two brothers and I looking over there. And it was just an eerie feeling, you know. It was a hurtful feeling. It was gut-wrenching, actually, to see the house nice and cozy, and, you know, and we're working hard to help Mama. So we just elected not to go over there.
So your mother had three boys.
She had four boys.
You and
I had
four,
yeah,
boys.
Four,
okay.
Boys and one girl. Uh huh.
Okay. Yeah, that's got to be really hard, and I don't know. You know, not having a father in your life can make any boy angry and you know, turn to the wrong things, because you're looking for that father figure, that mentor, somebody in your life to show you the ropes. And when you get with the wrong people like you did, you know, you go the wrong way. But what advice would you give to young fathers, young men that are not even fathers yet, that need to have some talking to? What would you tell them?
Yeah, that's very important, Lucinda. I mean, I'm so glad you mentioned that. Great question. You know, because my three brothers, it was three of us, and then two of us, my brother, my sister. The youngest baby boy and my sister had a different father. Well, their father stayed two blocks over from us. He wasn't in their life either. So it was all five of us dealing with the heartache of two fathers within 10 minutes of us, you know, and have nothing to do with us. And so my thing was, the pain that I experienced was a pain I knew for a fact that I wouldn't ever pass on to my child. And so that's why I had one son. You know, I had another one, but it turned out not to be mine. But I made a decision, I'm not going to bring kids into this world that I can't take care of. Because I have to be man enough and be realistic to know that I am responsible for this man's welfare until he turns 18, and even further than that. So, you know, you got these dudes out here making kids and not assuming responsibility. That's a crime in itself. You know, that's a crime in itself. That crime should be punished to the full extent of the law, as far as morally. You know, we have to be responsible. And we can't just be having, you know, having sex with no protection and just not even caring about if you're going to have a kid, you know, and having them everywhere, you know, this is crazy. I can't even describe, I don't have the words to describe the hurt that I've dealt with. So that's why I wrote about it, in hopes that it would convey, my hurt would be conveyed to the reader. You know what I'm saying? That this is not, this is just not going to work for us.
Right. Now, how long were you in prison?
The last time I did 7 years straight. The time before that, I did, I think, about 18 months before that. I did a year in county jail stints. And then before that, I was in youth authority. So I spent a lot of my adult, young adult life and my youthful life in prison, locked up and incarcerated. But I was just searching.
Right.
You know, I was searching for something. I was searching, not knowing what I really needed, but, you know, not even knowing what was going to even be the outcome. Because to be honest with you, I faced death so many times in the streets in different situations that I'm really not even supposed to even be here. But I know now that there's a reason why
you
I am
are
here.
Supposed to be here. Exactly.
Yeah, right? For sure.
That's
definitely.
Right. You have a reason to be here, and that's to spread your message
right.
and help others. So, you know, while we know that a big problem in our with our society today is that a lot of the fathers are not in the picture, and a lot of the mothers are working, and so kids are left, you know, to kind of fend for themselves sometimes. What's your perspective of the men in prison that have kids out here? What are they talking about, and how do they feel about not being with their families?
Yeah, that's another great question. Now, what I found is this. When I was in prison, there were some dudes. See, this is how the system works. Women, they had women out here that were on welfare, especially I was coming up. You know, they get food stamps and cash. So the woman has the power to make decisions. The man has nothing. He's not getting nothing. Some of the dudes were very comfortable about being in jail because they were too embarrassed because they could not take care of their kids, you know, because the woman had, and then you had some women that were spiteful. So some men were perfectly comfortable by being in jail because that's their way out of responsibility. Or, you know, just...
Wow, that's heavy.
Yeah, that's real talk, though. And, you know, they become institutionalized. So when their child is asking them for something, well, if you're in jail, you got an automatic excuse. What can I do? I'm in jail. Well, some dudes end up, especially when everybody else gives up on you, you got three houses and a cot, and you got the homies, you got you bet you live better in jail than you do on the street, especially when everybody's giving up on you.
Some jail.
And so, exactly, right? So, it's a hell of a cycle, but it's indoctrinating. Now it's indoctrinating to us, you know what I mean? And we have to break the cycle. That's the thing. We have to break the cycle.
Right.
Somebody's got to stand up and say something. And so that's what I'm doing.
That's what
I'm doing.
That's what we're doing.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
We have to stop. We need to have people stand up to change the laws. The laws that are putting innocent people for non-violent crimes in prison on their first drug offense or whatever. There's way too many men and women in prison taken from their
right.
families due to those types of laws that need to be changed.
Right. And now you have females that are getting locked up now at the same rate as the guys are. They're just as hard, you know. My thing was to write this. The next book that I decided to write is entitled City Within a City. In this book, every single scene takes place from an institution. Because what I want them to do, I don't want this painting picture. I really want you to walk in my shoes and understand this is what's going to happen to you when you go to jail. Because it's way worse now than it was back then when I was going. It was hard. But my thing is to show you what's going to happen. And if you could just visualize it, and if I can paint this picture where you can read it over and again, over and over, then you will, maybe it'll have an effect. And I want to show also for the people who don't go to jail, for the people who are there that need the support. And I'm going to talk about all the issues that we're talking about right now, and I'm going to talk about them in the book. Because these are the things that people talk about. Mm-hmm.
Those are all things that we need to all stand up together and change. And the more people that stand up together and speak out, then change will be, you know, in effect.
Right. Strength comes in numbers.
But we have to step forward and do it. We can't just keep talking about it. You have to put that action into it.
Right. I stripped myself. What I did was I made a sacrifice. When I first started writing this book, I said, I'm going to strip myself naked for the whole world to see. I had to make a decision to expose all my frailties, my weaknesses, my vulnerabilities. I had to make a decision to tell the truth about everything I felt, whether I was crying or wherever, or whether I was scared about something, whatever. I made a decision to be totally honest and brutally honest so that I could, you know, so you can relate to me. So there's nothing, my life is an open book, and I want to make sure that I relate to somebody and make a connection with somebody, whether it be the male or the female. Because, you know, now with the females going to jail, you got grandparents raising the kids now, raising the grandkids. You know, so that middle right. that middle has been erased. So we got a lot of grandparents now raising, and they're not prepared to do that. They're not equipped to even handle these kids nowadays, you know, at
right.
all, and especially the grandchild.
Right, right. Well, I'm going to hand the mic back over to Boyd for a minute, and I appreciate you coming on tonight and look forward to seeing you next weekend.
Absolutely. I look forward to seeing you, Lucinda.
Hey, G, I'm back at you, man.
Okay.
Hey, I just want to say, hey, this has been a great interview, and what we're going to do, I'm going to pay a few bills, you know what I'm saying,
and
play a commercial. I'm going to play a great song, and I'm going to dedicate this song to you, man. It's called Life Is Just a Story. It's by my homeboy, Willie Chapman. We grew up together and used to be out in the streets when we was teenagers, but now he produced music and all of that, man. He's a great producer, and me and him working on putting together Don't Love You Back Volume 2 mixtape that's going to drop in January. You feel me?
I also
want to give a big shout out to my homeboy at the Haymare Copa office and the Copa magazine, to my boy John, to my boy Mark, my man D Love. You know, much love to the whole team over there. You know, they roll with us all day. Shout out to Mom, we giving a shout out to our mom, and that's Evangelist Beverly Broadus Green, and we will be seeing Mom's next week in California. She will be having her book signing at Roscoe's Chicken and Waffles in Long Beach, California, and we will have my man coming out with us, and that's my boy Hip Hop Vader. He'll be in the house in Los Angeles with us doing interviews for the Copa magazine and be doing interviews. And he's going to do an interview with you as well, G. So you'll meet our boy, Hip Hop, you know. So we're going to pay some bills. We're going to be right back with my main man, G-Man. Be right back with you.
You see, life is just a story that someone has to tell. We're living in this struggle, every day we're going through this hell. You see, life is just a story that someone has to tell.
Show you how to use it. I flip flows on shows like life is so abusive. Adapting to overcome the struggle like how he do it. I prove it. Showing the world I am a king. Sing to the rhythm, my queen. This is your dream. Man in the building, example for all to see. Life can be a bitch. Keep stroking until you ski.
Keep stroking.
Stand on your own. Keep fighting and never leave. Foundation is the knowledge I'm kicking. We're gonna bleed.
See, life is just a story that someone has to tell. Living in this struggle, every day we're going through this hell. You see, life is just a story that someone has to tell. So try, try.
Prison, July 4th, 2013. She is now educating our youth and others after spending 13 years in prison. She is a member of the Streets Don't Love You Back movement, ran by Rob and Lucinda Boyd. She became a member while in prison. For more information, go to www.thestreetsdontloveyouback.ning.com. That's www.thestreetsdontloveyouback.ning.com.
Hey, 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 ladies and gentlemen, and welcome right back here to the hottest radio show worldwide, The Streets Definitely Don't Love You Back, and we here kicking it with the one and only G-Man in the house, you know? So we're going to go to a caller. We got a call on the line to ask G-Man a few questions. Let me put G-Man in. You there, G?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right, we're going to bring in a caller to ask you a couple
okay.
of questions. All right. Hey, hey, Will, you're in the house. You there, Willie? Yeah, I hope his call ain't dropped, G. But
okay.
we don't. You there, Will?
Yeah.
Okay, I got
hey,
you.
Hey, all right, my man. So you ready to ask G a few questions? You done heard a few things.
Yeah, yeah. First of all, I'd like to say hello to you and your wife, my brother. You know what I'm saying? I hope y'all are having a good,
appreciate
you know.
Appreciate that.
Good type going on. And most welcome to you, Mr. G, man.
Thank you.
I was just sitting here listening. I was thinking to myself, my first question is, does it ever cross your mind about, you know, when you was a drug dealer? I mean, I know it didn't cross many of our minds then, but does it cross your mind now about how many lives you hurt? Have heard them.
Absolutely. You know, and the thing about it, that's a great question. I love that. When I was selling cocaine, you know, I was watching the lives I was destroying, and I had an opportunity to continue to sell cocaine. And I said, well, even though I was hustling, I said, I'm going to get out of this cocaine game. I'm going to sell some weed. You know, even though that was wrong when I was doing it, I still said, let me lessen my sin. Let me just try to sin the least amount possible. First thing I didn't want to do, I didn't want to destroy any more lives. So that's why I decided to sell marijuana. I said I just got to sell enough of it. And that was my downfall, was trying to sell. You know what I mean? I was greedy. But yeah, that is great. I made a decision I wasn't going to sell no more poison to my community though. So I was conscious of that.
Yeah. Now. Do you ever think about some of those people crossing your path and maybe realize, you know, actually it happened to me a couple of times. I didn't,
uh-huh.
ran, you know, people didn't cross my path that I didn't, you know, put something in their hands or put something in their life and made a worse change in their life, and they seen me later and kind of was upset, you know.
Right.
Have you ever run across that?
Yeah, I've encountered them. As a matter of fact, you know, it's a trip because when I was down in Natchez, you know, the dude that had – actually, the guy that shot me, he did it 16 years, and he came home. It was on the front page of the newspaper down there. And so it blew me away because the sheriff had to call me and tell me, you know, that he was coming home. You know, he kind of was warning me. My text message was going off, and everybody – all this frenzy was going on. So – I had to make a decision right there. How do I deal with that? You know, how do I deal with it? Here's that took my life. So the OG man would have dealt with it differently. But this time, I just said, you know what? He served his time, and whatever happened, I have to be honest and be real about it. I got to forgive this man. I got to do the unthinkable in the game, which is forgive this dude and give him a pass and say, because my life has changed. And so that was a hell of a decision I had to make. I seen all the dudes that used to work for me and used to hustle with me, and you know, we hustled together. I saw them, you know, I saw them. You know, we kicked, we talked, but they knew for a fact that my life had changed. And so the word gets around. Once the word gets around, you know how the street game go. It's a word of mouth thing. And once the word got around, yeah, G Man's back. He's here. He's out here, but he's changed. And then the word got around. He's just writing a book, homie. He ain't doing nothing now. You know what I mean? He ain't even hustling no more. So that's how my life went.
So you feel by being humble and forgiving someone who's done something so drastic to you, you was also forgiven for what you've done drastically to others.
Absolutely. I had to listen. I asked for forgiveness for crimes worse than that. You know what I mean? I had to ask for forgiveness myself for some of the things I did to completely innocent people. So that's why I knew that everything wasn't about the money. So when I was speaking as a motivational speaker and doing my things, I was giving back because God blessed me with another chance. So I knew for a fact I had to do it, and I have no problem with it. And I just said, you know what, whatever it's going to be, it's going to be. You know, and so if God got this plan for me, prosperity is going to come. But let me work on this blessing first, and let me work on blessing some others and pass on the blessing that was, you know, bestowed upon me. And so that's how I'm being successful.
Tell us how that feels when you get that thing. Tell us how that
feels.
Oh, feel.
Man. I got goosebumps right now, homie. I'm going to tell you right now. I mean, listen,
yes,
man. This has been a struggle for me to get out of the street and to go to work and doing handyman jobs, painting and pouring cement and doing it. And I'm doing this with one arm. I started pecking on a computer with one finger. I wrote that book with one finger on my left hand. Never used a computer in my life. And I knew it was going to be a journey, and it was a tough one, but I never gave up. And you know what? It got better and it got better. The more things happened for me, the more I started typing, you know what I mean? I started watching these blessings start to happen little by little. Then it got to a point where I got to where I am right now. I'm living a dream right now. So that means everything I did was right. You know, after that, the humbling process is the most important part. So right now, you couldn't pay me to hustle. I don't care. This dude's coming at me with racks, with, you know, with a gang of money. I'm like, and I know it's a phone call away. Every deal is a phone call away from me, but I refuse to do it. I'm like, nah, I'm okay with what I'm doing right now. I'd be the world's dumbest criminal to make a move now. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
After all that's been done for me, and God, he going to strike me down next time for sure. So I got a little intelligence with me, though, you know what I mean? And I got a blessing. I'm here because of God's grace and mercy, and now he's showing me favor.
Yeah, I think most of these young cats need to realize that, you don't have to be cool to do something dumb. You could be even cooler if you do something to help the next person out.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
Right.
I like his story, man. I just wanted to, you know, congratulate you on your book and all, and your second coming. You know, the feeling just rolled right in me. You know, when you said
you
made
indeed.
That change,
I feel,
you know.
Yeah.
That's being a man right there when you take a step to better yourself and be more than just what other people want you to be or what you think you should have been.
Right. Exactly. And I want to just touch on this real quick. The dude that shot me, now, I said, well, I learned how to take a negative and turn it to a positive. So I knew it was going to come a time where I was going to see him again. I wanted to see him. It got to a point where I wanted to see him because I wanted him to know he didn't have to fear me no more. So right now, we're going to start filming a documentary where we're going to get it on tape where I forgive this man in front of the whole world. You know what I'm saying? And I want to show, mm-hmm. I want to take this negative, turn it to a positive. I want to show them, I want to show the whole world the power of forgiveness. Now, if I can do that and lead by example, I think that's going to be the most powerful thing that I'm going ever going to do in my life.
Hey, I'm a ride with you on that one.
Yeah, you feel me?
With you. Tell me how your kids look at it now, what their feelings is like about your change in your life.
Yeah, my son, you know, I only have one son. I got my son, man, Greg Jr. Mm. And I had to show him. So what I did was I made him pay attention to what I was doing. I showed him. I said, listen, what I'm doing, son, step by step. And I'm like, you know, I'm going to just show you, this is what your dad doing. And I said, you know, I knew it was going to be a minute. And I said, well, he's got to be patient enough to believe in me. Now, you know, how do I keep his attention along the way? Well, I just stayed true to the game, just started doing it, and just kept doing it. So right now, my son looking at me like, damn, my daddy did it, you know. He did what he said he was going to do. So I'm leading by example. Now, he knows for a fact what his dad can do. And so now he's bragging on his dad, you know what I mean? My son helped me selling books, and he's, you know, now he's getting notoriety for being a part of something positive. I saw my son get a taste of power in my neighborhood, and everybody's like, oh, that's Lil G. And, you know, and I'm watching him, pump his chest up, you know, and, you know, I'm watching how the homies are treating him because of my power. It was being passed on to him. I said, that was it right there. I saw that. I said, no, I got to pull this from him right now before he even get a taste of it. And so that was my job, and that was my goal, and that's what I did.
So it's got to make
that
you feel
right
extreme. It's
yeah.
got to make you feel extremely happy that you took a negative life in front of a young mind and changed it into something positive.
Absolutely. I made a difference. That's the most important part. I made a difference. I changed a life. I saved one life for sure. That's my son's life, the most important life.
And that's the greatest thing, G, you know what I mean? Because I got to iterate on that, man. You know, no man or no woman wants to see their daughter or their son follow that footstep. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
You was blessed on that one. And, you know, my son followed my footsteps and they ended up catching a murder case, and he did 15 years in prison. You know, he went in when he was 17, got out when he was 32. You know, he's 36 now. He's been home 3 years. So, you know, the game was, you know, but I wasn't there just yet like you was, you feel me?
Okay.
To say, slow down, you know what I mean? Because he was out there for real with it. You know, it wasn't about slowing down. We was
there,
you know? But that broke my heart, man, you know what I mean? Because I said to myself, now I see what my mom was going through when I was in and out of jail, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
And that crushed me, man. You know, I was my oldest boy. And then my second boy, he went to prison. You feel what I'm saying?
Yeah,
so they followed my footsteps all the way in the game.
Right.
But I was still in it, and I wasn't ready to see like you seen, but I wish I had. But God
of course,
is still
that's
good
great.
Because they both living and they both home.
You,
you feel what I'm saying?
There you go.
And they both got a chance at life now.
Wow, beautiful. There you go.
Amen.
I'm going to tell you, I want to share something with you, man. My son, now, I had a thing I call, I wrote about my book called No Secrets, where I share things with my son. Rob, you read the part about my son where I had this confrontation with this dude. It wasn't really a con. I was checking the dude. He only owed me $75. But I saw him, and I stopped, and I checked him. I said, well, I ain't going to just let it go unchecked. Now, my son has never got involved, never said anything about anything I ever did in the game, hustling or nothing, even though he knew what I was doing. But this one particular day, when I checked this dude, I was heading back to the car, I saw the look on my son's face. He was in the car. I saw a look on my son's face I had never seen before in my life. And God's my witness, and I said, I got in the car, and he said, Daddy, you got to watch that dude because you don't know the way he was looking at you when you left. That same dude is the dude that was responsible for setting me up, you know, to get murdered.
Wow.
You know what I'm saying? And so my son found out. My son read the book. He just thought, he just broke down and started crying. You know what I mean? And I'm like, wow. So my son was involved. And my son saw the beginning of the fall of my demise. He witnessed it with his own eyes. So he was a part of it. So now I got to make him part of the solution.
That.
Didn't even know.
Yes. Yes.
So I had to involve him in the whole process. Go ahead.
To get it. Yeah. I want to just say this right here. Will, you still right there, right?
Yes.
I want you to, before we go back to G-Man for 1 second, I want you to iterate on the mixtape that's going to be dropping in January, because Will is working on a project right now for me, you know what I mean? So I want you to elaborate on that for a minute.
Man, I'm, you know, man, that's, you know, that take us way back, man. We was kids, man. When I didn't have nobody in my life, man, and I broke it down to being, you know, a zero tolerance child. You know, I wasn't accepting nothing from nobody. It just tear up everything in sight. You know, I'm gonna bring this memory back for us, man, because if it wasn't for you being a brother to me as a child and bringing me into seeing that, you know, my problems was just, you know, a passing time. I mean, you saved my life, bro.
Wow.
Not just from the problems, I'm telling you, but you saved my life when at a sick moment, when if that door didn't open, I wouldn't be here today. So I'm going to bring all that, and, you know, I'm trying to make sure I got everything in place, because I want to bring those memories back, because, you know, even though we did what we did in the past, I've learned that you will always think about what is right in the long run.
Right.
What was right for me was I wasn't alone, but I just felt I was.
Right.
I couldn't find my brother, which it wasn't meant for me to find him. He was taking over in this area to do something that he was supposed to do in life, and I was taking over here where I was supposed to do mine. When it was time, it was going to be time for us to come back together and join that and bring that together. That's a beautiful thing when a creator can create you and take you to do something and bring you back as brothers. This brother ain't never been an enemy of mine. We ain't never spilled bad milk. None of this. Like my homies, I could say my homies on the street. You sit here and argue. That's not a brother, you know what I'm saying?
A brother
ain't going to lead. These homies ain't going to lead you in the right road when your brother will take your hand and say, hey, man, here go a sandwich and a glass of water. Rest.
Right.
Your homies want you to keep running so you can get caught up in the street. And they changed me from doing that, Rob. You really changed me from doing that, bro. Because I was a destructive child. I was very destructive, man, and you changed my destructiveness to creativeness.
Okay.
I had to do it. I had to be creative in my life. I couldn't just be, you know what I'm saying, it was almost like letting you down as a brother. If I ever seen you again, I didn't want to come back to you and tell you, oh, man, I'm a bum, I'm on crack. That wasn't going to be good for me.
Right. And I want to iterate on that for a few minutes. You know, it's like, you know, me and Willie, we grew up together, you know, and every time we would get locked up, you know what I mean? The last time I got locked up, I did 2 years on that case right there, and we was in Whitmore Lake training camp, you know, and I'm the only cat that he was even listen to, period. You know what I mean? I was boss back then, you know what I mean, at a young age. You know, I had my own squad, you know, and I seen every time Willie would act up, they'd lock the whole pod down. And so I had to go to him and say, look, young homie, I said, you got to cut that out, man. I said, because you messing up the whole thing for the whole team, man. So I brought him into the fold. Yeah, I brought him into the fold with my team, you know, and we've been jammed ever since. And we was 12 years old, you dig what I'm saying? So I've always had that mentality to rock my whole team, and everybody listened to me because, you know, like you was, G, everybody knew I put in work, and I wasn't scared to put in work, If you about my team, let's ride, you know. So this ain't something I got appointed to do. I earned my position at a very young age, you know. And at 51, I still sit in that seat, you know.
Yes, indeed. Different set. Yeah, right. Different setting, though. I love that. I love it. I'm looking forward to working with y'all, man. I'm listening. I mean, you know, when I first saw this thing, The Streets Don't Love You Back, I saw the concept. I saw it, and I had a vision already because it said a whole lot in the title. And I'm honored, man, just to be a part of something where everybody has a common passion in the mindset to make a difference. And so we're going to do some stuff together, man. We're gonna do a lot of stuff.
Well, God is good, man. You know, He bring real soldiers together. Like me and you was talking earlier. You know, you have a lot of people that truly don't understand how the Father works. You know what I'm saying? I mean, like we talked earlier, we're not knocking the man who went to Harvard Law School, or we ain't knocking him. But at the same time, you know, the Creator walked among cats like us. You know, He walked among the pimps, the hoes, the hustlers, the prostitutes. You dig me? And when He seen that it was time to touch your mind and touch your heart and switch you over and let the world know, hey, this man or this woman have changed, and you knew what this man or woman was about in the street life, so now that message could bring the other homies and homegirls into the fold that's willing to listen because they know the destruction you came from. You know, how can I listen to a man or a woman that has never even went through the destruction of the game? You know what I mean? I'm sitting there just looking at them like, what have you done for me to follow you? You feel me?
Right.
So we're not never knocking the man at Harvard, but we just saying that God, you know, he walked among all of that, man, and he found brothers like you, brothers like me, and brothers like Will and other brothers and sisters to do the work, you know what I'm saying, of him, you know? And I'm proud of that. You know, I'm proud to say that I'm a great soldier in the Army of the Father, you know, at all times.
Absolutely. At the end of the day.
At all times.
And that's beautiful, man. That's, you know, we need more brothers to you. We need more men of all races to unite together as one, man, because we need each other. Just like women need women need another woman to talk to, to comfort her and her womanly things, men need to come together instead of envying each other and hating each other. You know what I'm saying? Because we can get a lot done, a lot more done. Man, there's so many cats out here with life stories, man, if they just learn how to just sit down and talk about it.
And it's a lot of talent out here, too. A lot of talent.
Yeah, it is. Yes,
just like me. I mean, there's a whole lot of dudes like me out here, you know what I mean? That's got a story and can write it, can do the same thing I did.
When I went to prison, I seen so many artists, man, people drawing.
The baddest dudes in the world, isn't there? The baddest dudes in the world in prison.
Man. They don't find out they art until that calling come for them to sit down.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? Nobody listens until
now
I'm about to
ask
you this.
I'm going to have to ask you and Will this. Now, I know y'all remember around holiday time or you need to send mama
a
card.
Of course, man. You already know the game,
You paid my man, you know what I mean, some commissary, and he hooked the card up like it came from Walmart or something.
Better than that.
I really can't collab on that one, but I feel you.
Gino.
Yes, indeed. I had the artist, because look, I was in prison, man. I was selling heroin, so I was one of the most powerful dudes in prison. You get that sack in prison, you know what I'm saying? And so I always had the best of everything, the best artist, the best woodman, the best ceramic man, you know what I mean? I had the best. I always had the best going out, you know, to my family, you know. And so I already know. So I'm gonna touch on that in my next book, man.
Hey, man, we've been having a great time on the show tonight, man. And like I say, you know, I got my homeboys listening over at the COPA office. And once again, we're sending a big shout-out to them over there. And they have the COPA magazine coming out real soon. Don't forget, if you're in Arizona, don't forget the 25th. I believe it's going to be the Music Fest. It's going to be at Copper Sky over there in November the 11th. They're going to have a veterans celebration out in Tortosa. Arizona out there, and the Streets Don't Love You Back is going to be donating things to that event. And also I reach out to one of our main sponsors, Title Boxing Club Scottsdale. So I want to give a big shout out to the owners over there, you know, Jason and my man Troy, who always donates to our organization and donates to the gym as well. So big shout outs to the whole crew over there, and Miss Gabrielle, who's the manager. So we've been locked in with them for a long time, and they just do a lot with us. If we call them, they're there. So much love to that whole crew over there, you dig? So any other announcements on your end, G?
No, I got to get out of here. Actually, I'm running out of time, but my editors hit me up. My publishers hit me up. I've been talking to y'all. It's been an honor, man. I have enjoyed it. Will, you know, and to the wife, you know what I'm saying, Lucinda, I'm honored to have the opportunity to work with you guys. I'm looking forward to seeing y'all. You know, and Lord stay the same. I see y'all, you know, in next week or so. And
yes,
we're gonna continue to work.
Week,
this is just the beginning. Right. So we just getting started.
Know it, man.
Yeah, right. We just getting started. It has been a joy, man. I appreciate you reaching out to me,
friend.
Man. Give me opportunity.
It's an honor for you coming on, man. And God bless you, and send much love to your family, and we'll see you next week.
For sure. Okay,
yes,
Will.
Have a good one.
All right,
all right,
all right. God bless.
All right.
All right.
Yeah, Will, any announcements you got, Will, before we go?
Man, I just want to let everybody know they want to check out my video, just put it out, trying to get the Stop the Violence going again. It's at www.youtube.com/MichaelStylesFilms. The name of the song is Cold World Video, and you can check that out. And like I said, it's pertaining to stopping the violence, stopping our young kids from killing each other, and join them back together. Maybe, you know, teach them how to go ahead and get back in school and make something of themselves, so we can have a prosper a future in their life.
That sounds like a winner, man. And like, hey, don't forget January. We got that Streets Don't Love You Back mixtape coming out. You feel me? And it's going to be one of the hottest mixtapes dropping off. You dig? The crew is in the lab working. We got my boy Will, you know what I mean, dropping them hot beats for us. You dig? And he all the way up in Michigan putting in work, baby. Don't stop, baby. Wherever the boss is at, don't mean nothing. My team is still working, baby, because that's how we roll. You dig?
You already know.
So we about to get off the air. And we love everybody across the world who support the Streets Don't Love You Back. And before we leave, if you ain't got the book, The Streets Don't Love You Back, grab that at www.thestreetsdon'tloveyouback.com. And you can also grab the Real Free Rick Ross book, you feel me? His autobiography, you can go to Amazon.com, or you can go over to, once again, thestreetsdon'tloveyouback.com. So much love to my homeboy, Real Free Ricky Ross. If you ain't seen that new movie that's out, Kill the Messenger, you know what I mean? That explains about that Iran scandal that Rick got caught up with back in the day. And then October the 17th, Cracking the City drop. You heard me? So we popping on this scene all the way around the globe, man. And much love to moms once again. Evebless brought us.
Yes, sir.
You feel me? With the new book, Real Love 2. We'll be in Cali next week, you dig? Putting it down at Roscoe's Chicken and Waffle, Long Beach, California, where it all started from. You heard me?
Hey, I want
don't
to send my
late,
shots
man.
Out over there with you.
Right, it, man.
Take my shots out over there with you, would you?
You already know, man. So, hey, we're gonna break to this commercial, and we're going to play a couple of more songs, and then we're going to close it down for the night. My boy Will, always riding with me, you know, my childhood homeboy, you dig? And we still here, baby, standing tall, baby. So hold tight, Will, and we'll be right back, baby.
All right.
This your boy Meeks from Phoenix, Arizona. Team DG and THA, Saturday, November 1st, the squad. We in the No Flex Zone, party live at Arizona Event Center in Mesa, Arizona. It's going to be all the way live. Bring two canned goods before 11 and get in for 5. Text DG to 60259 for more discounts. DG, defining greatness. More information, log on to www.arizonaeventcenter.com. We'll see you there.
I sat in an empty apartment. I found a 9mm under the kitchen sink, and I stuck it up to my head, and I was ready to pull the trigger and ready to die. You know, I knew what I made of my life was a living hell. My name is Joe, and I'm 20 years old. I'm from Apache Junction, Arizona, and I started using meth when I was 16. I was doing about 8 ball a day, and it was terrible. It was lonely, you know, being out using it was lonely because all the friends that you had before, they didn't want nothing to do with you, and I pulled my oldest brother into it, got him wrapped up and involved in it, and, you know, the first time he tried it, he was hooked. You don't realize that it's not only hurting yourself, but it's hurting everybody around you. I look back now, I mean, everything I said that I didn't want to be is what I turned out to be, because I know how bad I was, and I know how many people I've hurt around me. I know that that's not something that I'm wanting to do again.
Brought to you by the Arizona Meth Project.
Hey, hey, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome right back here to the hottest radio show worldwide, The Streets Don't Love You Back, and we kicking it strong. We have my man G-Man calling in all the way from Cali, you dig? Also, don't forget, the Maricopa Music Fest is coming off the Copper Sky, like I told you, and they got a thing going on where bring some canned goods or some kind of food over there to the Copa office and drop it off, and you'll get your wristband, you know, so don't forget to do that. You know, Copa Office is on the Facebook, and you can go click them on. You can click on Hey Maricopa TV. They got that link on the Facebook. So it's going down, man. We do this thing big, man, you know, worldwide. The team is rolling. So we're going to go right back to another song, and we're going to be right back, man, because you can't stop us, baby.
Guide and protect us, Lord. To give us your grace and your strength and your mercy. Swinging the two-edged sword. I'm fighting for justice so nothing can hurt me. Even when I pass away, my legacy lives on through my seed and my working. Every little thing I pray. Give thanks to your grace and your strength and your mercy, your mercy. The first one I call every day when I wake and pray. Yeah, the one who is there when no one has a care, I say, Lord, you strengthen my soul when my mind wants to go astray. Yeah, and lift me up high when I fall and my ground gives way. Lord, how precious your love and your grace and your counting days. Lord, you show me the light and the dark, now I shall repent. Yeah, with all of my strength I will find within iron fist. Lord, the breeders of hate and the seed today don't exist. Guide and protect us, Lord. To give us your grace and your strength and your mercy. Swinging the two-edged sword. I'm fighting for justice so nothing can hurt me. Even when I pass away, my legacy lives on through my seed and my working. Every little thing I pray. Give thanks for your grace and your strength and your mercy, your mercy. With enemies close all around, I will call your name. Yeah, and slaughter the weak you quickly with no thought or shame. Lord, for my heart is firm in your hands, so I've no disgrace. No, I'll hail up your name every day with a smiling face. Boy, I never can give in a praise for your tenderness. Lord, to be in your infinite grace is my happiness. Yeah, no matter the time or the place, you're a miracle. Lord, you show me the light and the dark, so I shall repent. Guide and protect us, Lord. To give us your grace and your strength and your mercy. Swinging the two-edged sword. I'm fighting for justice so nothing can hurt me. Even when I pass away, my legacy lives on through my seed and my working. Every little thing I pray. Give thanks to your grace and your strength and your mercy, your mercy.
Yeah, we tried the long rocky road.
Uh-huh.
Buffalo soldier fights the power freedom war. The last we step on the throne, the conquering disciples burn your congregation. Yeah, collect your security. We build a better nation. Time to strive for unity. Say nothing and fight, nothing and war. But brotherly love can destroy oppression. If we come together, we can conquer all our foes. Live victory eternally. But if we keep on murdering through so much petty things, we're crumbling our destiny. But we were meant to rule upon the earth and multiply creativity and love. So I will always try to show love and respect until I die. And so I will humble and pray. Guide and protect us, Lord. To give us your grace and your strength and your mercy. Swinging the two-edged sword. I'm fighting for justice so nothing can hurt me. Even when I pass away, my legacy lives on through my seed and my working. Every little thing I pray. Give thanks to your grace and your strength and your mercy, your mercy.
Hey, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome right here to the hottest radio show worldwide. The Streets Definitely Don't Love You Back. We've been having a great, great show tonight, and we want everybody here in Maricopa to don't forget this Saturday, October 18th, we'll be having our second annual domestic violence walk right here in the Villages, clubhouse right there. You can see this right there, and we're going to have a great time with expanding this domestic violence thing because, like I say, every day is Domestic Violence Awareness Day, not just in October. So we have to put that out there and we have to keep that out there, you know what I'm saying, and educate these kids, women, men, all this about this domestic violence because it kills day in and day out. So we just want everybody to come out, attend that, and spread the message, you know, and let's help keep saving these lives out here. And with that being said, we want to thank everybody for tuning in tonight. And I'm going to let my homeboy have the last few words. And once again, don't forget my homeboy is over there at the COPA office. It's going down. Magazine will be out real soon, all day, every day, baby. They keep it moving. They stay on top of their game. So much love to my man Mark D-Love and my boy John. It's all love. Hello, caller. You're on the air. 1101, last four digits.
Hi, how are you?
Hey, how you doing, ma'am? Thanks for calling in.
I'm fine. I'm just calling to see, are you guys still interviewing G-Man?
Oh, Mr. G-Man just left off the air about 3 minutes ago. But you can also go back and listen to his interview. Yeah, you can also go back and listen to his interview after we get through, and we'll be through in about 5 minutes. And after that, it'll go to our archives, and you can automatically listen to the whole interview with G-Man.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you.
You're very welcome, ma'am, and thanks for calling in.
Bye-bye.
Uh-huh. All right, Will, you got the last few words, baby boy, before we close him out.
All right, Rob, I want to let you know, let everybody in Arizona know, even though I'm not in Arizona, I'm walking with you on that domestic. It's a must that we
all
teach.
Day.
It's a must that we teach. Hey, our women and our children will be what we teach them to be. You know what I'm saying? It's up to the men to lead. You know what I'm saying? So it's not up to, we can't be abused in our leadership, you know, with our kids and our women. Our women is going to love us if we lead the right way. You know what I'm saying? Lead them in the right way. Same with our children. They're going to love us even more if we lead them in the right way. and not just giving up and just turning our backs and eyes on them. But know that I'm walking with you when you take that walk. That's for real.
You know I'm appreciating that, man. You know we've been down for many, many years, and I'm going to go to this last song, and we're going to close the whole show out. And once again, thank everybody for tuning in tonight, and it's been truly a great show. So we're going to go out with this great song right here.
Much love to you and your wife, Rob.
Hey, man, you know I appreciate it, soldier, you feel me? And
yes,
I look forward to that finishing project, you dig? And I can't wait to hear it, man, because I know y'all working, baby, putting it in for folks.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Without a doubt,
you already know.
My man. All right, baby. Hey, we're going to go out with this last song. You ride with me on this last song, and then we're going to close it out. Thank everybody for tuning in tonight, and we send much love around the whole universe, man. We keep it 100.
Much.
Peace and love.
All day.
9/11, they think we don't know. Oklahoma City, Agenda 21.
They know some of us.
No, but they think
y'all didn't know I was gonna come like this. Y'all ain't
FEMA kids. The barbed wire pointed in. These are my current events. Infowar.com. Now hear this. Better listen to what they say. They ain't just talking this. There's a war out here. No one is safe from.
Doesn't matter how many rounds or how big your gun.
It comes down to one thing. Knowledge is power. Go read some articles. Just spend an hour contemplating InfoWars. Or find them on YouTube. You'll be surprised how much it'll change your mood. Stock up your drive through. Verify your water.
Don't buy into mainstream media. Don't even bother.
Teach one. Go tell your father, your mother, sister, brother, and uncle and daughter. The temperature is rising. It'll only get hotter. I hear what they're saying. I won't be the cannon fodder. I will be their example. No, not me. Not my kids, my wife, my friends. No, none of my family. It's a war on information. And the planet's a prison.
Inside of you all.
Let's make a decision.
I've made a decision.
To make an incision.
Cut out the bullshit.
Goodbye, good riddance.
It's a war on information.
And the planet's a prison.
Inside of you all.
Let's make a decision.
I've made a decision.
To make an incision.
Cut out the bullshit.
Goodbye, good riddance.
I feel you, Alex Jones.
But not like the TSA.
I hear you, Alex Jones.
I'm listening to what you say.
You got them on the run. They know we're marching their way.
All with knowledge and history and maybe a few guns.
They can't fool us.
We're not the ones.
They can lie to some, but not to all.
As we stand up, down they fall. We're taking our stance back. Liberties and all. We ain't playing their games. We're taking the ball.
We're patriots. They best heed the call.
As they're walking through the valley, they should watch where rock falls. They can't stop us all.
There's strength in numbers.
Many hands make light work. We can watch them crumble.
We are coming, that is all.
It's a war on information.
And the planet's a prison.
Inside of you all.
Let's make a decision.
I've made a decision.
To make an incision.
Cut out the bullshit.
Goodbye, good riddance.
It's a war on information.
And the planet's a prison.
Inside of you all.
Let's make a decision.
I've made a decision.
To make an incision.
Cut out the bullshit.
Goodbye, good riddance.
1984.
No, 1776.
We ain't gonna be your slaves.
We ain't gonna be your bitch.
We ain't gonna be your punk.
We ain't gonna be your trick.
When you come, you'll find us shooting bullets and flicks.
It's just a bunch of bullshit, so feel this, when we stick it won't hurt, just a little prick.
Little girl, get back, take a hit of your own itch.
This is just a preview of what is coming.
Down the pike, or down the knife.
If you don't respect us, we don't respect your life.
This is not a threat, it's a warning to you.
So you're coming after us, we're not chasing after you.
We're standing our ground, don't get too close.
But we are like the sun, you'll get burned like toast.
From coast to coast, and sea to shining sea.
None of your tyranny.
It's a war on information.